You're listening to TASH Amplified, a podcast that seeks to transform research and experience concerning inclusion and equity for people with disabilities into solutions people can use in their everyday lives. Today, we're talking with Jenny Root. This discussion is based on her presentation at the 2015 TASH Annual Conference titled Beyond the Basics: Access to Mathematics Problem Solving for Students with Severe Disability. At the conference, Professor Root was presented the Alice H. Hayden Emerging Leader Award for her work challenging conventional beliefs about what students with disabilities can accomplish in mathematics, as well as developing technological tools to help them get there, and supporting parents who believe their students can achieve more in inclusive settings. Introduce yourself for our listeners. Tell us about your background. What brought you to your current research?
Well, my name's Jenny Root, and I'm currently a doctoral candidate and research assistant at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, but I will be moving to Florida State University next fall as an assistant professor there. So my current research is in the area of mathematics and working with students with severe disabilities, but to say kind of what brought me here, I have to go back to when I was working with a family of a child with autism. And through a couple years working with that family, just as like an outside person, I saw the difference that good teaching can make in the life of a child, especially with a disability like autism. And I just saw him bloom and flourish as far as his communication, his academic abilities, and decrease in severe behaviors. And that change not only influenced the child, but his family and community as a whole. You know, seeing him being able to participate on swim team and go into church activities and things like that. And that really made me think, I want to be able to do that. I want to be a part of that. So I went into special education at UNC Wilmington and worked with Linda Meckling there. And she really sparked my interest in research in school settings also, and the question of what works for who, sort of before I knew the term evidence-based practice. So after leaving undergrad, I was a classroom teacher of students, middle school students with disabilities. I taught students with high-incidence disabilities in inclusive settings, and then the school opened a program for students with autism. And so in that role, I sort of changed and collaborated with general education teachers, so taught students who were on the alternate assessment who had autism. And from there, with that collaboration I was doing with the general education teachers, I saw a huge need for positive behavior supports at a school-wide level. So I became the school-wide PBIS facilitator and worked with general ed teachers and the administration to make sure that we had a positive school climate for all of our students and that was inclusive for everyone. So while getting my master's degree while teaching, I began to do a thesis research project in my own class, and just my master's work at East Carolina University, particularly with Sandra Warren, I really started to believe in that bringing research into your classroom and bringing in the articles I read or the practices I learned about and trying them with my students and saw a huge positive impact. And so from there, I really had to make this decision of what is it that I want to do? I want to impart this bigger change, thinking back to the first student with autism that I worked with his family. And I thought, I want to be a teacher of teachers. And I want to be more involved in research so that we can make sure our students with autism are successful in academics. So I applied to the PhD program at UNC Charlotte, and I've been fortunate in my time here to really be able to work towards those goals, working under the direction of Diane Browder. And then I also work for Project Solutions, which is an IES grant that's developing a mathematics problem-solving curriculum for students with moderate and severe disabilities. So that's really what's brought me kind of to my spot here in math work for students with disabilities.
One of your current projects is bringing up to date a survey of the literature on teaching mathematics to students with disabilities dating from 2008. What was the state of knowledge in 2008, and what have we learned since then?
Well, I have been working with some of my other colleagues who work on the Solutions Project, Fred Spooner, Diane Browder, and Alicia Saunders. And we have worked on this updated review of the literature. So in 2008, Browder and Friends published this review where they looked at all the mathematics intervention studies for students with moderate and severe disabilities from 1975 to 2005. And then it was published in 2008 in Exceptional Children. And so coming onto the project my first year, and we kind of kept going back to this seminal literature review, I thought, well, what's happened since then? You know, if we think about the education of our students with moderate severe disabilities, a lot has changed very quickly with general curriculum access and inclusive settings. And so I wanted to know, has what I've been seeing in the schools had an impact on the research and what we know works for mathematics, which has kind of been the neglected area of academics? So in 2008, when that was published, we knew that special ed teachers and researchers were really good at teaching time and money and basic skills. We know how to do that. But the problem is that was basically all that was being taught. So they also established some evidence-based practices, so things like systematic instruction, providing the students multiple opportunities to respond and practice a skill, and teaching skills in vivo, meaning in the actual real-world settings. So those were the things that we kind of gleaned in 2008 as this is what works. So what we found is then we went, this research team that I'm with, we went from 2005 to 2015 with this question of, has anything changed? Is there anything new that we've learned? And what we found were 34 studies that met our criteria. And we looked at a couple things, like what exactly is being taught? What is the context of instruction? So where are students with moderate and severe disabilities being taught? Is there still good evidence that students can learn mathematics? Particularly, we were looking at grade-aligned mathematics, and what evidence-based practices are being used, and are there any new evidence-based practices that we've revealed? So what we found as far as the context of instruction was the majority of the research is still being done in special education classrooms, so by special education teachers or researchers. So we can't really draw information as far as does that mean that's where the students are? But that's where the research is being done. Fewer studies were actually conducted in general education than in the previous literature review. Fewer studies were also conducted in the community. But that kind of fits with the trends. And thinking about the previous review going from 1975 to 2005, there was a lot of community-based instruction there. But what was interesting was the format of instruction has changed. So a lot is being done in small groups, which is more conducive to mathematics and inclusive settings, not only working one-on-one with a student, but with multiple students, including with being taught by peers or paraeducators. As far as what was being taught to the students, what we found was there were less emphasis on those basic skills as far as looking at everything that was done. So it wasn't only on time and money, basic number identification, but we saw an increase in things like algebra, an increase in geometry. So there's still a need for those areas to be researched, but we saw more evidence that students with moderate and severe disabilities can learn grade-aligned academics. They can learn things like algebra and geometry, data analysis, and problem solving. What we found as far as evidence-based practices, systematic instruction, which the previous literature review found to be an evidence-based practice, was still being used, which shouldn't be shocking. That's what works for our students. But things like systematic prompting and feedback, use of a task analysis. But we also unveiled some new evidence-based practices, and that's what was really exciting. So we saw that technology-aided instruction, so using technology to teach, either to provide instruction or to present materials, is an evidence-based practice, as well as explicit instruction, things like using a model lead test procedure, multiple exemplar training, as well as the use of manipulatives, which is really important for a lot of our students who don't have procedural fluency or they don't know their math facts. So being able to use manipulatives to supplement that. So that was some of the exciting findings that we found from this most recent literature review.
We'll end on two questions about how your research can improve the lives of people with disabilities. What should teachers know about your findings?
I think the overarching thing that teachers should take away is that students are capable of grade-aligned mathematics across domains. They're capable of going beyond the basics, is what we say, and really delving into all the domains of mathematics and using problem-solving and reasoning skills. What I've found through this literature review, as well as my applied research in schools, is the question is not what is the student capable of learning, but the question is what do I know how to teach them? And do I know the best way to get this content across to them? So that's where the gap in our knowledge is effective instruction, is what works for these more complex, higher order skills, not is our student capable of it? Because every time we've kind of pushed the boundaries and raised the ceiling on expectations, the students have met those expectations if we are using sound evidence-based practices. So one, we know that systematic instruction techniques based on applied behavior analysis, they're effective in teaching math. Things like breaking down multiple step tasks, like solving a word problem, using a formula like the Pythagorean theorem, using a task analysis and breaking down those steps is effective. And then we need to teach those steps systematically using things like time delay or system of least prompts. We also know that explicit instruction, it's a technique that a lot of teachers are very familiar with. It's used with high incidence disabilities and in general education. Again, things like model lead test, multiple exemplar training is also effective for students. So we're finding some of these strategies that are very common in general education and other areas of special education can also be used and effective with our students. And then technology can be used. And I have to have a word of caution there because technology doesn't replace the role of the teacher. But it can be used to provide consistent instruction, program reinforcement, to present materials, to make them more accessible by using things like read aloud and virtual manipulatives. So technology can really enhance instruction, overcome a lot of the barriers that our students might have to mathematics tasks. And then finally, being comfortable in using manipulatives and knowing that the concrete representation can really assist our students with these abstract tasks. So those would kind of be the key things that I think teachers should take away from this research literature review.
How can families working on their students' IEPs benefit from your findings?
Well, I believe all students should be working on grade-aligned mathematics, and so they should have IEP goals that reflect grade-level standards. Now, say majority of students with moderate and severe disabilities probably aren't performing at grade level in every domain of mathematics or in every content area, but their IEPs and the goals and their instructional targets should be aligned to the grade level. Now, at the same time, so how do we get them there? How do we get them to that goal? I think families should emphasize the use of evidence-based practices and make sure their teachers are using systematic instruction techniques, and that's how they get them to reach those goals. And making sure that students who may have some early numeracy deficits, that those are still being worked on within the context of grade-aligned math. Also that problem solving and reasoning is emphasized from an early age for students of all ability levels. Mathematical reasoning and problem solving is required for many leisure, career, academic, and daily living skills. So increasing their independence and success in mathematics is going to benefit their current and future opportunities the same way that literacy skills do. So I think that parents should advocate for making sure their students are given access to the full range of the general curriculum in mathematics and that sound evidence-based practices are being used to teach those skills.
Short of access to a scientific literature database, how can parents and educators find out more?
Well, the Solutions Project, the grant that I work for, has a website that's continually being updated with information. And so the website for that is access. www.uncc.edu. And then another great resource is from East Carolina University. They have a series of modules related to teaching academics to students with severe disabilities, and it includes a mathematics module and a systematic instruction module. And the address for that is mast.ecu.edu. So those are two free resources on the internet that I think would be a great place to kind of start as far as what does grade-aligned mathematics look like, and how do we get our students to success in that.
Do you know when the review will be available and in what journal?
I do not. Stay tuned.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for taking the time today to talk with us about the state of mathematics education for students with disabilities, and thank you for your work as a scholar and a leader.
Thank you.
You have been listening to TASH Amplified. New episodes will be available every 2 weeks. For more about the series, including show notes, links to articles discussed, a complete transcript, and a schedule of episodes updated as they become available, visit tash.org/amplified. You can have the series delivered automatically to your device by subscribing on iTunes. Also, if you liked this episode, be sure to leave a rating for us there. TASH is a values and research-based advocacy association located in Washington, D.C., with local chapters covering 18 states. In 2015, we celebrated our 40th anniversary. We offer organization, advocacy, collaboration, scholarship, and education for people with disabilities, researchers, educators, service providers, and family members. In addition to this podcast, we offer a scholarly quarterly, Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities, a popular magazine, Connections, a series of regional conferences, and our annual conference. You can learn more about TASH at tash.org. You can receive updates from TASH on this podcast and our other activities by following us on Facebook or on Twitter at TASHTweet. This has been a sample of the colleagues and conversations available through TASH. It is only because of the excellent work that our members do that we can bring you this information. For more resources such as this, and to become a member, visit tash.org/join. We'll hear from another outstanding advocate again in 2 weeks.